On today's podcast, Josh Bass and Marcus Barahal talk about the big win to Philly, how the Nets couldn't buy a shot in Toronto, and how the additions of Wilson Chandler and Timothy Luau-Cabarro have added to the rotation. Coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I'm your host, Josh Bass. Joining me, as always, is Marcus Barahal. You can find us, of course, on Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, rate, and review. Marcus, how are you?
Josh, I'm good. We're recording this early Tuesday morning. Nets have a game tonight, so looking forward to that. No Zion for the Pelicans, but still good to be looking forward to some more Nets basketball.
I have an ominous feeling about tonight's game.
Really? Why?
I just have a feeling like Drew Holiday, because everyone's been talking about, oh, the Pelicans are a disaster, and even without Zion, they've certainly underperformed.
Yeah, they haven't won in like a month.
I know, but I think Drew Holiday is going to go off for 35.
Well, yeah, Brandon Ingram last time, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's not feeling good. It's not feeling good. But they proved me wrong with an excellent win against the Philadelphia 76ers, and we'll be recapping the two weekend games, the loss to the Raptors and the win over the Sixers. Let's start on the high note. They kind of just drubbed the 76ers. Obviously, no Joel Embiid. Al Horford was questionable to play, but he did end up playing, so they were able to slide him over to center. Mike Scott got the start for Philly, but the Nets just played pretty well from the start, and then by the end of the game, in the fourth quarter, you look up, the Nets are up by 15 or 20. Brett Brown empties the bench, and that was kind of all she wrote. I mean, it was a pretty thorough beatdown.
Yeah, I mean, the Nets won every quarter. Like you said, it was kind of consistent throughout. Like, they were the better team, and Philly was missing Embiid, but even, like, with him in the lineup, they've gone in and out. They've been, like, pretty bad on the road, so it wasn't necessarily unexpected to see them not completely show up, and they just couldn't really hit any threes, and for once, a team actually shot worse than the Nets from the free throw line. So that definitely helped also.
Yeah, no, that was definitely nice. I mean, this is interesting. I think, like, the big catalyst in this one was obviously Spencer Dinwiddie with 24 points, 6 assists. He was a plus 13. He really got going in the third quarter a bit. And remember how much he tormented Philly in the regular season last year. He kind of slowed down a bit in the playoffs because he was such a focal point for them to guard on defense. But in the regular season last year, he destroyed them. He had like a 39-point game, and the Nets went 2-2 against a team that they had a clear talent differential against last year. So much so that going into the playoff matchup last year, we remember when we did the podcast with Keith Pompey of Locked On Sixers, he was just like, he was out of sorts, just saying that the Sixers needed to do everything they could to stop Dinwiddie. He was just so consumed by what Spencer Dinwiddie could do against Philly. And obviously, when you have Horford back there, as good as he is, and as good as the career he's had, he's just not the rim protector that Embiid is.
Right. I mean, Embiid, just like purely from a size perspective, I think he's probably like 5 inches taller than Horford. So that definitely, that impact was felt. But it's good to see the Nets still win this, because last year in that playoff series, like, even when Embiid missed the game, I think it was game three, they still struggled against like the likes of Amir Johnson and whoever Philly was able to throw out. So it's good to see the Nets like take care of business, so to speak, against a team that, like, I know that the Sixers are better than the Nets, but when they're missing Embiid, they're really not. So it's good to see the Nets deliver on that end at least.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you think? Because I feel like they just shot the ball so poorly from 3, 5 of 26. And Horford, who I love, I stand for Al Horford, dating back to early on his Atlanta Hawks days. I mean, he looked so washed. Like, because you'd think that he would still – there was a couple times where he posted up Allen, because he still is so crafty in the post and has such a strength advantage and low center of gravity. But he was 0 of 6 on threes, and these were wide-open attempts. And usually he'll hit a couple of these at least, but, like, he just looked a step slow on both ends. And, I mean, he's 33. He's played a ton of minutes in his career. He's definitely not the player he once was. But when Horford's at, like, full strength, what you think he'd be, even his last couple years in Boston, I feel like Philly's just so much clearly better than this Nets team, because you have more space to work with Simmons, even though you're losing the monster that is Embiid.
Yeah, I mean, Horford, he's definitely, like, struggled a bit this year, and he didn't have the best year last season. I remember when Philly signed him, like, a lot of people, I think, were expecting, like, prime Al Horford, like, kind of like a Twin Towers thing with Embiid, but I know, like, from seeing on Twitter, like, from the likes of Bill Simmons, I guess, but Celtics fans were kind of like, oh, yeah, like, we're kind of not happy to see Horford go, but, like, it's not the worst thing in the world that he's leaving, so I think people might have overrated that signing in the offseason just because, like you mentioned, his age, he is getting up there. So, yeah, I mean, he put up 10 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists. He did have 3 blocks and a steal in this game, but that's kind of, like, been what he's produced all season. Like, he's hasn't scored over 11 points in the last 5 games. So he's been this player, like, for a while now. I think maybe the Nets just haven't seen it in a minute. This was the first matchup with Philly this season.
Yeah, no, that's true. It took a long time. But I don't know. I kind of like Philly's bench. Like, Norvell Pelt, I was getting a kick out of the whole game. He had a really nice block on DeAndre Jordan. He kind of has a similar look and feel to Nerlens Noel. After Noel shaved the flat top, the hair he has now. But I really like Pelt. He was kind of like a very modern center. Neto, I always say that he would be a great one of your favorite players for the Nets. He was cooking in the first quarter, even though he couldn't get going. Thibault, everyone's really high on. Chopped Cheese came in at the end. Kyle O'Quinn. So they have some guys.
His official nickname, eh?
Yeah, I tweeted that. No one got it. I don't think anyone watched the video.
I think he was the only person in that video who knew what that was.
Yeah. His other nickname is the Big Bar Mitzvah. But, I mean, on the Nets side, they played well. You know, Joe Harris had a great game. He dunked in the first one of the first plays of the game where he caught the ball in the corner, pump faked, went and basically almost got away with an up and down. I think he just kept his pivot foot down, and then all the Sixers players basically stopped because they thought it was an up and down. He drove all the way and dunked emphatically, so that was nice to see. I didn't know he could do that. I think the biggest play of the game was Spencer Dinwiddie catching the ball off an inbounds and then just yamming it on Tobias Harris. That made me so happy. I watched that over like 10 times.
Yeah, Garrett Temple with a nice inbound pass. Yeah, Dinwiddie just like all over Tobias Harris. That was crazy. And seeing all the quotes afterwards, it was interesting because it seemed like all the guys on the team and like Kenny were like, yeah, Dinwiddie like is able to do that kind of whenever he wants. He just like chooses not to for some reason. But yeah, it was a huge play. I saw Jalen Jacoby actually was like considering it for Dunk of the Year. So I don't know if it was that good, but it was very good for sure.
Was it better than John Morant on Baines?
Oh my God, that he was like still going up. That one was.
Yeah,
I think I'd take.
I think I'd take Jaws just because Baines is like you look at Baines, he's just like a massive human being compared to Tobias Harris, who's like a normal size, slightly big NBA player, but Baines is like 7 feet, like. Looks like he should be in Game of Thrones, and for Ja to just destroy him, like, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, Baines is like a classic guy who gets dunked on also. So.
That's true. Well, because he contests it. Which is good.
Gotta respect the effort.
Yeah. I guess some other notes from this game. I thought Joe Harris in general was awesome. Temple had a really solid, low-usage game, 3 of 4 from 3, a rebound from his poor performance against Toronto where he couldn't hit anything. Torian Prince, I think, he struggled in this one, and he struggled in both these games, shooting from especially two-pointers, was a combined 5 of 16 in the Raptors and Philly game on two-point shots. I mean, that's kind of inexcusable. He's taking a lot of these like mid-rangers off the dribble, and when he gets to the basket, he's struggling to finish. I think I tweeted this out on the Locked On Nets account. Follow us there. But his two-point percentage, his percentage at the rim, shooting at the rim, is down 20% from the Hawks. Last year, and you'd think that he'd be getting better looks in a better offensive system.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't shot the ball well, dating back to that Denver game even. Like, he was 3 for 13 that game, 2 for 12 against Charlotte, 5 for 14 in the Raptors game, and then 4 for 12 in this one. So that's 4 straight games of just, like, dismal shooting. And then the 2 games before that, he was good, but yeah, it's just been a bad stretch for him shooting the ball. I don't know if that's because he's maybe not getting as many like clean catch and shoot looks without Kyrie, but I feel like Dinwiddie's done a good job of driving and kicking and delivering the ball. Guys like Joe Harris swinging it, so I feel like the looks are there. The shots just haven't been falling.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I feel like his 3-point percentage is is good when you look at it. You know, it's that's not necessarily the problem. I think if someone came into the season saying, hey, the Nets are going to give Torian Prince that extension and he's going to come in first 26 games, shoot 39% from three on nearly seven attempts a game, you'd be all for it. But the problem is when you look at him and Joe Harris, you'd think Joe Harris would be the guy with Torian Prince's stats where he's getting up a ton of threes, good percentage, good volume, but he can't hit a two-pointer, and it basically is the same exact two-point percentage and three-point percentage. But Joe Harris is super efficient on his twos, and Torian Prince can't hit anything when he technically has more athleticism and more size.
Yeah, I just looked at that. Yeah, his overall field goal percentage is 39.4, and his three-point percentage is 39.3. So they're literally like almost identical. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's embarrassing for TP. And I think to make this signing a success... That's his nickname.
I guess.
To make this signing a success, especially since his defense isn't great. You know, he can pass a little bit when I feel like his vision is okay when he's not just like looking to gun. But I think Joe Harris fits on this team a ton better, especially when you consider guys like Kyrie, Karis, and KD are going to be coming back within the next year or so. And I'm honestly even putting Kyrie on that same KD timeline at this point because we just don't know. I think that if the Nets were to re-sign Joe Harris this offseason, and he's obviously going to command a much greater salary than the $8 million he's making this year, maybe something like 13 or 14, do you have to look to see if there's a taker for Torian Prince?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, his contract is up after this season, right? He's a restricted free agent?
No, they gave him a 3-year right. Yeah. So he has an extension.
Yeah,
well, I mean, I'm saying it's not good value.
Yeah, I think Harris definitely fits the team better, and they do have to pay him. Don't they have other guys coming up? Jared Allen.
He has one. He's one more year, and then a restricted.
Yeah, but so they
definitely don't have money to resign. They're not going to give him an extension, I don't think.
Right. They've got guys coming up, I guess, is the larger point, and they've obviously got a much higher like cap or not cap, much higher. They're spending a lot more on guys with. These new free agent signings with DeAndre Jordan's huge contract as well. So it would make sense to move someone. I saw a lot of people talking about Dinwiddie being a trade candidate just because of how well he's played and how his role might have to shrink once everyone's back healthy. But yeah, I think moving Prince would definitely make sense if there was an offer that worked for the team, just because like the trade that they got him in, like, I don't think they would want to do that same type of thing the other way where it was basically just a salary dump. Like, he's played well enough with his jumper where you kind of want an asset back if you are going to trade him, I think.
Yes, I agree with that. Because the trade itself, like, Nets basically ostensibly gave up a first-round pick to get him. The other first-round pick they gave up was basically for Atlanta to take on Allen Crabbe. So I think that the Nets would want an asset. I don't know what kind of team he fits in on. Maybe even like someone like a Philly type, not necessarily them, but someone that wants just a guy that can technically be lower usage and just be a rainmaker from outside when they already have the other pieces. I think that could be an interesting fit for him. Maybe even like a Clippers type of team where they have guys that can cover for him in Kawhi and Paul George, even though I know that they're not going to have the salary necessarily because they also need to think about if they want to re-sign Montrezl Harrell and give him a big contract. But I think that type of team would fit him well in theory. So it should fit the Nets well in theory, but it just doesn't. And maybe that's because he's out there without KD right now and the Nets don't have the other defensive wings that can cover for him.
Right. He's kind of being asked to do more than he would like in an ideal situation, I think. Like, he kind of does belong on a team as like that fifth guy on a good team who can just kind of spot up and hit open shots.
Agreed. Quick pause here to tell you guys about Spotify Wrapped. If you're a Spotify listener, use Spotify Wrapped to show us your top Locked On podcast for the year. Take a screenshot and tag us at Locked On Live and Locked On Nets on Twitter, and we will share and retweet. Want to see what you guys are seeing? Maybe even a little Locked On Hawks to see if they miss Torian Prince. But Marcus, we can get into Torian Prince trade possibilities another time. What about the breakout game from Timothy Luwawu-Cabarrot, who got his first big minutes with the Nets in both of these games, the Raptors and then also the 76ers against the team that drafted him, a little revenge game here.
Yeah, it was good to see. Musa was kind of the guy who was dropped, I guess, from the rotation for TLC. Yeah, but he looked good. I've always kind of been a fan of his game, like dating back to when he was with Philly. It was just good to see. I think he made a huge impact in that time he did play. He played the fifth most minutes on the team in that Sixer game. So it kind of came out of nowhere. Him and Kurucs both played in that Raptor game. I don't know. Did you like expect this at all? It felt like it just came out of nowhere to me.
No. Because yeah. I was looking at his G League stats also, and it's like, you know, I think sometimes it's tough because at the end of the first round when these guys are drafted, these teams are really, I think, oftentimes pigeonhole these wings and saying, hey, you're a 3-and-D guy. And when you look at TLC's stats, there's no 3 in his game. He's really not a good shooter whatsoever. His form looks kind of wonky. He doesn't hit it well in the G League. He's more so a driver and a slasher, and that's what really impressed me against Philly, where it's like his role is completely different than I expected, but 0 of 2 on 3s, 3 of 4 on 2s, had some really nice takes to the basket where he drove in, finished strong, could have gotten an and-one on a couple. I definitely did not expect that, and I think it's interesting, and definitely I think his skill has probably developed, getting some reps in the G League, being able to handle the ball more and drive, even though it's not against NBA competition. He's getting nowhere near those reps in an NBA setting just because he's never going to be kind of a top guy or even a starting caliber player. So it was nice to see. He gave the Nets a little bit of a spark. And it'll be interesting to see if they keep him in the rotation at all once Karis and or Kyrie come back. I would assume no, because I think he's behind Nwaba, who's really entrenched himself. But he's also ahead of Pinson. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, I love Nwaba also. Team high plus 17 in the Sixer game.
Yeah, he had some nice plays. I mean, like one of the plays he made was he just took a charge against Horford in the post, and like that's the kind of plays that you need. Just not giving up those easy baskets. Wilson Chandler made his first appearance with the Nets, played 19 minutes, hit a jumper, only took one shot, 7 boards. I mean, the shot he took, I mean, he went around to pick, knocked down a 15-footer, and like I tweeted this on the account, but that's the play that Musa can't make. Kurucs, as much as I love him, can't make. Nwaba can't really do that. Pinson can't do that. It's just being able to create a shot where it's not the most efficient, but it's a relatively decent shot overall in the scheme of what the Nets bench has been creating, and being able to knock it down. Those plays are really crucial. So I think he adds an interesting element, especially with his strength on defense, even though he's definitely lost a step or two. So it was good to see him back. And also, there was a really interesting article on ESPN written about his suspension by Malika Andrews, right, Marcus?
Yeah, she's done a great job writing a ton of Nets stuff, actually, and, like, tweeting stuff, so definitely follow her. Just talked about his experience, like, being suspended and how it's a lot different than just, like, the regular, like, what's happening with Kyrie or Karis or KD, where they're injured but they're, like, allowed to be with the team. So you see those guys on the bench, like, celebrating big plays, that kind of thing, bonding with the team, but Chandler has to leave the team arena like 2 hours before every game and can't be back until 2 hours after. So he like has traveled on almost every road trip with the team, but you haven't seen him on the bench because he can't be there. So he does his workout like earlier in the day, has to leave, watch the game either from like a hotel or a bar or something, which is insane that he's like showed this level of commitment. I think that that's like what's kind of earned him that immediate playing time more so than anything, is that he's just kind of kept working, kept like staying engaged with the team, watching the team, and said in the article that he was like, he'll text every single player like after the game, like giving them notes and comments and stuff like that. So he's clearly very locked in. He seems like he's appreciative of the team for kind of sticking with him through this. So it was good to see him back on the floor, like you said, and like the team said after, he, even though he didn't take a ton of shots, he only took the one, he provided spacing. It's kind of that thing that we've talked about a few times where just your reputation can kind of do more than anything else. Like if you're perceived as a guy who can knock down an open shot, teams are going to be less likely to drift off of you. So even if he's not taking them, just him being out there is a positive.
Yeah. And I didn't think of this because like he's not a great 3-point shooter in his career. I mean, he's pretty average, I think 33-34%, but I feel like he has the rep of a scorer, so people do run out on him over the years, I'd say.
Yeah, there's definitely guys like that. Like the classic example was Rondo a couple years ago, where people just assumed he couldn't shoot, but he had kind of become an average 3-point shooter. So this is like the inverse of that.
Yeah. But that was interesting. So I'm excited to see what he can do. I think he gives some leverage to Kenny in being able to provide more of a classic stretch four option. So we'll see. I mean, yeah, he definitely seems like a really good guy from that article and from his rep over the years. And I think the most surprising thing was that he was so down on himself that he considered even quitting basketball. Like, that's pretty intense.
Yeah, I mean, I can't even imagine, like, what the situation is like, but what he's saying and, like, what everyone is saying is that basically he took this substance to help him recover, and he didn't know that it was on the banned list.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, you committed a crime that you, like, didn't even know was illegal, basically. So I can't imagine, like, what that would feel like.
Neither can I.
We're men of the law, Josh.
Exactly. Today's episode is also sponsored by Breaking Tea. If you are looking for a last-minute fun sports gift for the holidays, go to breaking.com/lockedon. Breaking Tea makes sports t-shirts around teams' passion moments. It's great for all fans. Go to breakingtea.com/lockedon, and then feel free to search the site for great shirts and fun sports gifts. Okay, Marcus. As much as I love all the good, cheery news, we do have to talk about the Nets' loss to the Raptors. This was a tough one. I think, yeah, you know, Siakam just went off. I mean, his final numbers don't look that great because he shot the ball so poorly in the second half. But in the first half, he scored 25 points, was 8 of 13 from the field. I mean, the guy was just unstoppable. He was hitting his threes. He was just catching the ball 15 or 16 feet from the rim and just shooting over the Nets' defenders. So this might have been where Wilson Chandler would have been really helpful. He was getting to the basket at will. And the Raptors hit their first 7 threes to start the game. They weren't all easy ones. Powell was hitting some tough ones. Lowry pulled up from over 30 feet and just drained it. And the Nets' offense was humming in the first quarter, dropped 31 points, got off to a 12-2 start. Dinwiddie, I thought, was excellent, really swinging the ball well and maybe even being too unselfish. But ultimately, the Raptors were just a juggernaut in that first quarter. And then when they cooled down in the second half, that's when the Nets could not buy a basket. Garrett Temple, 2 of 14 from 3. Joe Harris, 1 of 6 from 3. It was really Dinwiddie was the only guy that could get something started. They tried to play Rhodey Kurucs. He played 18 minutes. He couldn't get anything going. And the Nets were just kind of stymied against a really excellent defensive team up north.
Yeah, and it was really just that like run in the first quarter after the Nets started up 12-2. Like, Toronto was 9 of 12, I think, in the first quarter on threes, and for the rest of the game they were 5 for 28, so they definitely cooled off. But like you said, the Nets couldn't really take advantage, and it was I guess the second straight game that they blew a double digit lead, because they blew that Charlotte game also. So definitely a tough stretch, but it was good to see the team bounce back against Philly. Just I think you made a good point about Chandler being a guy who could have maybe helped contain Siakam. They kind of match up body type wise. And Siakam, like, wasn't super efficient if you just look at his, like, overall numbers. But like you said, like, that first quarter, the Raptors just, like, couldn't really miss. And I guess they built up too much of a lead for the Nets to come back from.
Yeah. I mean, it was just tough. I mean, they couldn't get – they were kind of down 7 or 8 that whole third or fourth quarter. And It just, like, they just couldn't hit the big baskets. And I had a few people over. And as always, whenever I have people over when I'm watching the Nets, they delight in me just going crazy at the game. So there was a few players that definitely drew my ire in this one, Torian Prince included, and then Garrett Temple as well. Even though I love the guy, just couldn't get it going. Nwaba did actually have some good minutes. I think the most notable was a really nice steal in the half court, and then just throwing it down for a nice dunk. But he continues to play well, and you know, he's the first guy off the bench for the Nets now. So he's really solidified his spot in the rotation and has very quickly earned the trust of Kenny Atkinson.
Yeah, I'm glad Kenny appears to be like listening to the pod. We've been touting Nwaba for a while. And I know a friend of the show, Christian Winfield, has been tweeting about him also. So good to see him. He's been getting some run the last few games. It's been good.
Yeah. If Christian's tweeting about him, that means he's big time now.
Yeah. did you see, this is unrelated sort of, but did you see Christian's article in the Daily News about Kyrie not causing the Celtics problems, according to Jaylen Brown? Just wanted to shout that out also.
I saw that on my Twitter feed today. I was waiting to read it, though.
Yeah.
But I did see the headlines.
Yeah, just another great piece from Christian. Just it seems like they all seem to think that Kyrie wasn't the problem. Just saying. Yeah. You know.
I mean, yeah, if you did think someone was a problem and ruined a season of your career, you're not going to be, like, dapping them up and hugging them the way that they did after the Celtics-Nets game a few weeks back.
Yeah, yeah. People don't listen, though. You know?
I know. It's all about the storylines, and that's the storyline people want to go with. So as much as everyone can refute that, it kind of is what it is out there. But who knows? You know, it takes a while to break these things down, so we can only do our best and try to ensure that we set the record straight.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah. So that'll do it for today's podcast. Of course, subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us. Love to hear what you're thinking. Follow us on Twitter. Marcus is at Marcus Barahal. I am at JMBass_. The podcast is at Locked On Nets. The Nets have a big game tonight. Or I guess not even a big game, but it's 1 of 82. Going to Nollins to play the Pelicans tonight on the road. Hopefully they get that dub and don't let the Pelicans snap their 12-game losing streak. But we'll be back in your ears after that game talking all about it, and hopefully my prediction on Drew Holiday is wrong. But until next time, be well.
Bye.